Okay, O sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, Lord Brahma, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. Okay, the measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb. Okay, so this is our whole pastime here of Varaha Prakat. Next slide. Tasya vipashyata kasta kranena kilabharata gaja matraha pravavride tat adbhutam abun mahat. O descendant of Bharata, while Brahma was observing him, that boar became situated in the sky in a wonderful manifestation as gigantic as a great elephant. Never a boring day if you're master of the universe. 3.13.20 Marichi pramukhair vipray kumarair manuna saha dristva tat shaukaram rupam tarkayam asha chitradaha. Struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma with great brahmanas such as like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in various ways. So you have Marichi, Kumaras, Manu, and they're arguing. So even at very, very high levels, there's a lot of intricacy in understanding Krishna consciousness. So the picture here is a nice picture. It shows Brahma surrounded by some of these rishis like that on his different symbols. He must be really impressive. Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Brahmaloka. So even this very, very, very high level, they're trying to understand what's going on. Text 3.13.21 Kame tat shukarat vyajam sattva divyam sattvam divyam avastitam aho bhatashyaryam idam nashaya me vinihristam. That's incredible. Yes, satyam divyam avastitam. I guess they're talking amongst themselves now. Is this some extraordinary entity come in the pretense of a boar? It is very wonderful that he has come from my nose. Lord Brahma has a dry sense of humor. It's amazing. Prabhupada says that compared to the girls on the heavenly planet who have wonderful bodily fragrance, their perspiration smells nice, their bodies are cooling into the embrace in the summer and warming in the winter, so many things. He said compared to them, the girls on the earth planet look like horses. So, out of our noses comes all these delightful things. But this whole pastime from beginning to end seems like a joke. One thing after another. Lord Krishna's, the funny incarnation is just how and maybe each time he improves, it makes it a little bit more absurd. First, he comes out of the nose, Then he engages in this Falstaffian Shakespearean dialogue with Hiranyaksha, Okay. 22. Driston gusta shiro matraha. Kshanad ganda shila shamaha api swid bhagavan esha yajno me ke dayan manaha. First of all, this boar was seen no bigger than the tip of a thumb. Wow, Brahma's got a big nose. And within a moment, He was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu? Aha. Purport. Since Brahma is the supermost human, supermost person in the universe, and he had never before experienced such a form, he could guess that the wonderful appearance of the boar was an incarnation of Vishnu. The uncommon features symptomatic of the incarnation of Godhead can bewilder even the mind of Brahma. The uncommon features symptomatic of the incarnation of Godhead. Yeah. So here's what he did, a very good point, that we all have symptoms, but when it comes to the Supreme Lord, his symptoms are, if he's standing here, are bewildering. Yeah, they're so uncommon like that. Yeah. And also, too, it's a fact. You know, Brahma was there. There was nothing, nobody. And the first person he came in contact with was Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Okay. Then from him, you know, from his portion, his potency, come the Kumaras, you know, and everybody else. And, of course, they're very prominent in investigating, you know, what is reality, divided in different categories. Yeah. I forgot what it is. It's something just incredible, like about a 26-month-old child, or whenever children start to acquire concepts, maybe like, you know, 3 years old or something, you know, table, chair, window, you know, refrigerator, you know, they start acquiring like something like three concepts every hour or something, in different categories. Okay, Coca-Cola, 7-Up, tomato juice, orange juice, water and tea are all liquids. Okay, you know, and that way, so the Kumaras are running around, you know, doing this and putting everything into categories, putting everything into sources like that, and keeping it all in their intelligence. You know, yeah. And so, they couldn't figure out what it is. So for Brahma then to have this conclusion, it must be God because I know everybody else. You know, and everybody else comes from me. You know. So all my experiences have to be superior. Okay. And text number 23. Iti mi mankshatastasya brahmanaha saha sundabihi. Bhagavan yajna purusho. Oh, this is a very, very terrible, terrible phrase for the Maya bodies. Bhagavan yajna purusho jagar jagindra sanibaha. While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, roared tumultuously like a great mountain. Prabhupada says, it appears that great hills and mountains also have their roaring power because they are also living entities. The volume of the sound vibrated is in proportion to the size of the material body. While Brahma was guessing about the appearance of the Lord's incarnation as a boar, the Lord confirmed Brahma's contemplation by roaring with his gorgeous voice. Well, we can get evidence from smell. We can get evidence from taste. We can get evidence from looking. We can get evidence from feeling. And we can get evidence from hearing. But the most subtlest, of course, is the evidence from hearing. Yeah. And so here, he's looking and he's seeing, acquiring evidence, but then he hears the roar. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's not... Here's some sound. It includes elements that you never heard in your entire life. You know, you didn't know you were capable of hearing such that kind of sound. And you have one of the eight primary and we call it, Astapasabhika Bhavas and the Vyabhichari Bhava reactions like that. Yeah. Yeah. Self-evident. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But how can mountains roar? I was speculating in this in my scientific Doubting Thomas attitude. It's interesting, for example, like to me it's interesting. Yeah. The Eiffel Tower, built by Mr. Eiffel, it's made of metal. And actually, he forgot one factor when he was designing the whole thing. It's quite an accomplishment at that time. It was something of so big, of like this, you know, joined together metal pieces like that in Soho, so high. And there was a lot of worry that maybe it wasn't going to be like, you know, rigid or substantive. It wasn't going to be able to hold itself up. But it did quite well, and it actually became like one of the wonders of the world, you know. But when the sun comes up on a good summer's day, it starts to heat one side up. And that, of course, causes the metal to expand. Then it passes over to the other side like that and so on. And I think it moves something like at the top, something like 6 inches or something, maybe 18 inches. It actually moves back and forth every day. You know, it's going back and forth like that because of the sunshine. So let us speak of great mountains. At least we're talking about great mountains because the change in temperature and everything else, we could see that they also would produce tremendous, you know, what's the word, like sounds, depending on the changing in their bodies and stuff, like temperature and things like that. Of course, how fast do they live, you know, and how many of them are alive now? I've heard that Prabhupada was going on the Radha-Damodar bus from maybe Boston to New York or something like that. They convinced Prabhupada to do it. And as he was traveling, he was pointing out which hills were alive and which hills weren't alive, like that. Yeah, very interesting. You know, we're starting to see life in so many places like that. And of course, we were so impersonal and so what's the word? Nivishesha Shunyavadi, voidists. I'm looking out my window here, and of course, there's asphalt on the 5-lane road in front of me, and across, of course, that's a cement sidewalk. And, of course, that is a big asphalt parking lot on the backside of this mall here with steel dumpsters and steel telephones, you know. And so we try and produce this totally impersonal atmosphere because people are icky. You know, people, you can't figure them out. They do weird things, you know. They have personal relationship with you. I've got what seems like maybe a poison ivy infection, you know. And so, yeah, you start to relate to these plants, and they have all these, like, you know, icky relationships. In our hierarchy, in Western knowledge, first comes physics, and then chemistry. It was a battle in the beginning, who would occupy the throne of reason, chemistry or physics. Went on for some time, and finally physics won. So then we have to adjudicate, you know, justify any kind of definition or analysis in chemistry from the atomic physics, you know, the physical properties like that. Then after chemistry, we get biology and medicine, and from those we get, you know, neurophysiology, psychology, and finally the person. And the people then produce culture, and they produce the Srimad Bhagavatam. So God and the Srimad Bhagavatam are the highest products of matter. Like that. So much impersonalism, you know, like that. But when people occupy these things, oh my goodness, what happens? Even crystals and so on, you know, they grow probably, huh? Different qualifications. What is consciousness? Yeah. And consciousness is knowledge, huh? In Chitta, in many ways, they can know. Yeah. Okay, so little considerations about Lord Varaha. I also look at the word jagarja. Yeah, that's what he was doing. And it says resounded. Jagar, giving birth to Jagar, maybe. Then I was thinking about famous mountains. Yeah, actually, there's not much to chew on these purports. Like, they're kind of very simple, like that, just kind of lila, you know. Famous hills. We have here Giriraj, Govardhan, a famous hill. Kalinda, and the river Kalindi is born from Mount Kalinda, like that. It's a he. Himalaya. Hema means ice and Laya means place. So Himalayas are like that. And I wonder, all these seem to be masculine, you know? Like all the, it's interesting. Mandara. Of course, Mandara is the, what is it, the mountain that they use to, for the pivot, you know, for the Lord Varaha's back. And Mount Meru is the, as far as my analysis goes, it's the, geomagnetic mountain, which is being carved out by the spinning of the earth, like that. But it's describing it goes all the way up to Brahma Loka or something, as residences by Brahma. So this brings us to this point. This is a very subtle level. You know, these things are taking place in the level of like dreams and things like that. So there's no gross aspect to a lot of these things yet. But when the earth gets dropped down into the Garbhadak, okay, she gets dropped down into a gross level. You know, when John F. Kennedy was killed, the whole ocean, whole nation plunged into an ocean of grief, ocean of grief. So same way, I would suggest that this Garbhadak ocean, from our perspective, is a subtle ocean like that and so on. Then Mainaka is the mountain that popped up on Hanuman's flight to Lanka to offer him a place to rest. And Arista, there's two mountains in. Can't remember where they are. One is Hanuman jumped on, I think, Arista when he took off. And he landed on another one like that. Yeah. So any other famous, Malaya, the Malaya Hills. Yeah. Any other famous mountains anybody can think of? At the end we can do that. There's the famous mountains here. Okay. Now here we have creation. Because I'm sure many people also want to know where Mr. Peanut came from. this is natural, isn't it? I remember, you know, I was driving around with actually my son, you know, and I was becoming a Hare Krishna devotee, and he asked me, who made the animals? And he was like maybe three or something. Who made the animals? You know? And my first response was to start maybe describing evolution. But I was thinking, no, it was just stupid. You know? So I said, one guy named Brahma made them. And he was totally satisfied. You know, okay, somebody makes my lunch, somebody makes houses. Okay, so somebody makes the animals. You know? So here's Mr. Peanut. If you notice, Mr. Peanut has a threefold bending posture. He has a third eye. And he carries a danda like that. So I was thinking, this is nonsense. This is more of my famous nonsense. But as soon as I thought that, right on the hedge, right next to me, I was walking into the house, was this crumpled up, you know, picture of Mr. Peanut. So maybe God does have a sense of humor. Yeah. There's also a very famous painting. I can't find any copies of it, called Mr. Peanut Goes to Heaven, like that. Okay. So right now we're in third canto, and I kind of look at a little overview here. Maybe we step back a little bit. We'll get some more content for discussion here. And it starts off because the sages at the end of the second canto, they want to hear about the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. It was mentioned earlier, and they think that's going to include some stuff that we haven't heard yet, because all we've heard so far is about Krishna's position as Mahavishnu, the relationship between Mahavishnu and Brahma, is that and so on. Yeah, maybe. At least, you know, Brahma, because then Brahma saw saw Mahavishnu, the Arvadaksha Vishnu, and then he saw heard the four verses like that. So they wanted to hear something more intimate. And actually what the topic to be heard was about Dwarka. What is Krishna's position in Dwarka? Is Dwarkanath an incarnation of Vishnu, or is Vishnu an incarnation of Dwarkanath? You know? So people, they're way above, you know, smoking marijuana and, you know, picking up girls at bars and things like that. You don't do this. But they started coming in contact with subtle problems, subtle questions, you know, subtle things that need to be answered for their practical service, for, you know, resolving their anxiety. Okay, so it starts off then with, you know, this whole thing is, they're asking what happened during this conversation. But so often in the Bhagavatam, the background's given. You know? So here he describes how Vidura met Uddhava, and he asked him all these questions, how are the relatives, what's going on, everything else, so on, you know. And then Uddhava starts just remembering, you know, describing everybody and all the things that have happened, like that. And of course, beautiful Lila Smaranam. You know, we're giving some classes on this now and stuff at nighttime, taking advantage of this. But it's such a nice little Krishna book almost. The remembrances of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan. Then he sends him to go see Maitreya and accept Maitreya as his guru. So he approaches him. He talks about his general attitude, his general idea. They synchronize. And then basically he asks him, how does God create the world? How does God maintain the world, which we're seeing around us? And how does God then take it all back into himself in a time of dissolution? So the first thing it's discussed then is the creation of the universal form. Okay, it's kind of like one module. Then further inquiries by Vidura. We got the universal form, but the elements need some kind of, I think it describes that Now, they all were there, but they couldn't integrate. They couldn't work. So then what happened is they asked Mahagarbhodaksha Vishnu how to integrate. He didn't even answer them. He just went ahead and expanded himself and did it like that. So all the elements became integrated. And then Brahma becomes manifested, Mahagarbhodaksha Vishnu. And then he asks for prayers. Okay, and he offers prayers like that. So he won't fall in Maya when he's doing his job, and so he can do his job. Okay. So then next thing we have as a module here, actually I guess maybe 11 and 12 should be together maybe. Because then it goes through the divisions of creation, calculation of time from the atom, you know, and these are then the subsequent creations of Brahma, you know, which seem to be more like maybe these are also sarga, you know, but Brahma is. It hasn't taken over exactly yet. Yeah. So, interesting point. So then finally then we get the creation of the actual living entities, starting with the Kumaras, then with Shiva, then with Maricha, Purastya, Angira. These are all mental sons of Brahma, and Narada especially. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And along with that, of course, it's going too slow. That's the main point. It's going too slow, all this creation, the service, the development of service. Same way, we may feel that the spreading of the Sankirtan movement is going too slow. And we've got to speed it up here. So out of somebody's nose may come, I don't know what will come out of the Kali Yuga, out of somebody's hard drive, something on the screen will appear, a secret mantra or something like that. Yeah. And anxiety, desire to do service, yeah. Then Krishna manifests. So Satarupa and Swayambhu Manu manifested, and they were, again, another manifestation. They were the part of body of Brahma, and they were capable of biological reproduction, which would speed everything up. But they're on the level of, like, Adam and Eve, and can't even see each other's physical beauty. They're so subtly stimulated by each other and things like that, so on. Psychologically, everything else, yeah. So then Brahma asked them, and they agree. And of course, this is an example of another example. Two examples. The Kumaras, what do you say? They disagree with Brahma, and Swayambhu Manu agrees with Brahma. So two examples of two bona fide, you know, devotional attitudes like that. Yeah. So then Brahma and Satarupa agree, you know, and then Brahma blesses them, everything else. You know. But the problem is... that after they agree, which I guess it hasn't, they agree, and they say, but, you know, we're just so, like, cool that we just can't think about, you know, these gross activities. They kind of make us vomit when we think about having a relationship like this, you know. And so we got to get, you know, in the mode of passion, you know, and have a little bit of Martinelli's apple juice mixed with vanilla ice cream. What else? With a few peppermint sprinkles and, you know, watch some Pirates of the Caribbean movies or something, you know. Yeah. And then we can get a little bit in the mode of passion and become stupid a little bit. And then we'll think this is really great and this rasa for this material thing is great and be fooled about the future pleasure, okay. But that has to be taken care of in a different mandala. We're on a loka, which is too subtle. We got to get down to a different mandala. So we need to get down to Bhu mandala. Bhuvar, we got the fairies in the sky, and Swarga, we got the demigods. And so then usually that's the three worlds, and everything in Swarga sometimes, you know, includes all the higher planets, like Brahmaloka sometimes. It's called that way. So we got to go down from, I'm not sure where they are. Where are they? Maybe they're in Bhuvar? No, Bhuvar? No, maybe they're even higher than that, I think. So you're good to come down. But then, of course, the problem is going to occur that there's just, that the Garbhodak ocean is now taken control of, you know, of the earth like that. And again, we become submerged in an ocean of impersonalism, a more ocean of industrialization, of mechanization like that. It exists on the intellectual level of using Euclidean algebra and making machines. So we make machines out of our transportation, machines out of our medicine, machines out of our communication, machines out of our personal relationships, you know, machines out of our political science, trying to use these Euclidean geometry in these relationships. Maybe I mentioned it, but the biggest selling book after the Bible for a long time was Euclid's Principles, where of course he describes his whole way of geometry that he invented or he got from some source like that. You know? But it's not so big now because it's included, it's embedded in these high school mathematics books and things like that and so on. That's the fact, is the Bible was there, but right along with that was this analytical method. And by doing that, we can become masters of the universe. So we're going to see them in the appearance of Lord Varaha right now. And that, of course, raised the question about, where these demons came from. That'll flash us back then to the story of pregnancy of Diti in the evening. And then the children are born. Then, of course, it's going to kick back again. Going back to how that actually Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha are actually Jaya and Vijaya. So description of the kingdom of God, the two doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, Jaya and Vikaya, cursed by the sages. Well, the sages were cursed by Brahma, and they cursed Jaya and Vijaya. So at the beginning there seems to be a whole lot of cursing going on. Yeah. 317, okay. And the sages fall down. And that's when they occur. They take birth. I think it was Narahari was describing this nasty, horrible, situation when they were taking birth. And they were like pea and oaks. He's a weird guy. He says that the word Russia comes from Rishi Alaya. Scandinavia comes from Skanda. I asked our very serious and very respected professor, Dr. Bandapajaya, about him. And he said he's a little speculative, but he actually comes up with pretty, thought-provoking evidence, So his point was that Germany, what is the name for Germany? You're sure you know, right? In German? Deutschland. And he said, actually, it comes from Deutschland. So you can imagine these two guys. When they walked down the street, they would block out the sun with their frames, which were like iron, and the street shook under them. And probably said, this is the desire of every materialist, walking here and there, that the sun will block out his thing here. One second here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Adi Rama, Adi Rama. Okay, yeah. Making sure we got our volume there. And the one class will give the entire class and there's no audio. Okay. Okay, so now we go ahead.
Now Maharaj, we can hear you fine.
Yeah, I just checked it out there too. We got Hiranyaksha walking around with his big laugh and his big mustache, whoo, whoo, whoo. And what does he do? He's fighting with everybody, so finally he's going to have a fight with Lord Boar, which now is a flashback to, I guess kind of like what's happened is everything in between this and the chapter we're on now, five chapters, has been a flashback within a flashback, like that, And now then Lord Boar fights with Hiranyaksha, okay. Then after that, that kind of takes care of that. Now we get back, I think, to Manu and Sadarupa. Okay, conversations between Maitreya and Vidura, back to by Manu and Sadarupa. Okay, after the earth was raised up, what happened? Well, Manu and Sadarupa went down to the earthly level and have five kids. Okay, and then Manu was looking for husbands for his daughters, so he went off and found Kardama and had conversations like that. And then Kardama and Devahuti got married. Yeah? And then they had a very, very, gratifying material life, with full Krishna conscious perspective. So one last time, is that what we're doing? Or are we going through this one last time like that? And experiencing it to such a good that we won't be attached again? I know one devotee who was a little attached to marijuana in the beginning before he got initiated. And he said he made this, he tried to give it up this way, tried to give it up that way. So finally he said, okay, all I'm going to do is just when I'm smoking, when I'm intoxicated, when I'm coming down, I'll just chant Hare Krishna. It's the only rule I'll make for myself, So he said it was amazing because it actually gave him enough of a perspective, some kind of transcendental position that he actually could actually see the entire experience. And seeing it one time, he was never attracted again. That's all it took, So same way, one time, if maybe as conscious as we are going through the whole thing, we'll see it, we won't be attracted again. So that's what happened. And Kardama was leaving home. Devahuti was complaining because she'd been so much absorbed in how, what kind of sari she had to wear to the Sunday feast, you know, and what kind of prasadam her husband brought back on the plate, and if her kids were like, you know, excelling in the Gurukula, you know. And she, so she got kind of the externals of the whole Krishna conscious process, but she didn't get the internal part, which is to get freedom from death. So then Kardama said, don't worry, you know, your son will teach you. So then Kardama went off on his sannyas. And then finally, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, six chapters are Kapila's instructions like that. Yeah. And then after that, we've gone to Devahuti, then we go to the other children. Systematically, we go through all five children of Swayambhu, Manu, and Sadarupa, and that's how everything is organized up until the eighth canto. And then we go to the other Manus, like that, same thing. Then our Manu in the tenth canto, ninth canto, and tenth canto. And then back to the Manus and the progeny of Manu in after Krishna and Balaram. And then the glories of Srimad Bhagavatam, the summary of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is where we are right now. You know? And of course, we're hearing these pastimes, the whole point. Let's go ahead here. Okay. And of course, these ten incarnations, they're glorified here. Vasati dashana sikare dharani tabalagna shashani kalanka kaleva nimagna keshava dhrita shukara rupa jai jagadishahare. O Keshava, all glories to Lord Keshava, Krishna, who appeared as the boar. The earth was held between his tusks, which appeared like the scars on the moon. My goodness. And then there's a lot of Varaha pictures. You can do a Google search. The one I found on the right was nice. It looks like an old Bible picture, you know. And I think we have in the background, looking at it now, there's some kind of string. Oh, so I saw Varaha's conch shell in his hand. Yeah. Wow. So many times artists will sneak in a little joke in their pictures. If you look very carefully, you'll see some funny thing like that. But here is Varaha, and you can see they got an interesting run here on Yaksha. He's holding up the earth, which again is more like a mental type thing than a ball of dirt inside of different kinds of things like houses and so on that make it the earth. Yeah. So, and then this chapter then will go on with the appearance of Varaha. He killed Hiranyaksha. Yeah. And then 34 through 45 will be very, very nice prayers, you know. And those can be analyzed into what, because the sages and so on, they'll glorify, illuminate different qualities. So many times, prayers, to my experience, they start off with, you are the transcendent Lord, forever existing in your eternal abode, enjoying your own pastimes. But for the benefit of the devotees and all living entities, you accept this material perspective in the mode of material nature, although you are not encumbered by these. And that kind of thing, so many times like that, so on. Yeah. Okay. In 3:13:50, this is the very, very last verse, kind of like, which kind of summarizes everything very nicely. Who, other than one who is not a human being, can exist in this world and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? Yes. Yeah, very interesting, huh? Who can exist in this world as a human being, yeah, and not be interested in the ultimate goal of life? And of course, you meet people like that. I mean, I met our neighbor, kind of said hello there and everything else, and we started talking. And I think he was, you know, he didn't have a chance to talk to someone like an ISKCON devotee there. And it was giving him such a perspective on his life. And he was saying, actually, I very much like history and seeing how people think in different places like that and so on. He was like an Air Force guy from Alaska, I think, like that and so on. Kind of big, muscular guy, very nice, you know. So people, even everybody has these, some kind of higher tendencies. If you're a human being, you know, that's why we have so much culture, art. A human being in the mode of passion, okay. But art, culture, architecture, you know, different social prestige, you know, things, to ways to communicate subtle things to different people like that, kind of clothing styles, you know. You know? So, but who other than one who is not a human being can exist in this world and not be interested and the ultimate goal of life. Who can refuse the nectar of narrations about the personality of Godhead's activities, which by itself can deliver one from all material pangs? Nayad vachas chitra padam harer seso. Yeah? Nayad. It's the other one, yeah. The narrations of the activities of the personality of Godhead is like a constant flow of nectar. No one can refuse to drink such nectar except one who is not a human being. Devotional service to the Lord is the highest goal of life for every human being, and such devotional service begins by hearing about the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead. Nama, Rupa, Charit, Lila. Yeah. Yeah. Only an animal or a man who is almost an animal in behavior can refuse to take an interest in hearing the transcendental message of the Lord. Yeah. I remember when I was a child, other people seemed to have no problem looking at each other. You know, but I was quite reticent when I was walking down the street. I would be like, when people coming toward me to like look at them, you know. And now I'm beginning to appreciate that actually, you know, it's just like an animal. You don't know what they're going to do. And you say one thing and it just kicks them right off, you know. They go on a whole other chain of consciousness. They go from being your friend to being your enemy, from being neutral to being your lover, you know, like that. And so with people, it's just you're going to be all the time, you know, actually we're dealing with two-legged animals to a large degree, you know. And it's very, very difficult because you can't trust an animal with horns or all this kind of stuff. And human beings, of course, have really big horns. Thermonuclear horns like that and so on. And judges and lawyers and so on. And sharp intelligence to say very harsh things and so on, you know. So we're surrounded by people who are like animals. That's why they don't take an interest in such a nice movement. There are many books of stories and histories in the world. There are many books of stories and histories in the world. But except for the stories of narrations on the topics of the personality of Godhead, none are capable of diminishing the burden of material pangs. Therefore, one who is serious about eliminating material existence must chant and hear of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, one must be compared to non-humans. Munayas 125. Since the whole we're hearing now this pastime of Varaha, I'm trying to, Narahari was saying, enter into it to some degree. And I wonder what Lord Varaha smelled like. Usually that's not a very outstanding feature of hogs and boars and stuff. I wonder what Lord Varaha smelled like. Maybe Old Spice aftershave. Maybe he's the origin of Old Spice aftershave. Munaya sadhu pristo hum bhavadbir lokamangalam yakrita krishna samprashno yinatma supasivati. So this is where it all starts. The sages ask their questions, and then Sukadeva Goswami offers his obeisances to the acharyas on whom he's going to draw to get the answers to their questions. And he says to the sages directly, the first thing he says to them, Munaya sadhu pristoham bhavadbir lokamandalam yakritam krishna samprashno yenatma supasiddhati. Next slide, Master. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Questified. O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Look at this picture on the internet here. I guess it's a real elephant. Maybe it's a statue. You know? But it shows a juvenile baby elephant sitting in a waterfall. So if you've been out working all day in these agricultural things with sticky stuff on your skin and you know, gnats and flies biting you and heat and everything else, you know, can't do any kind of noon gayatri because you can't like, you know, get a proper bath. So you come back at the end of the day and take a nice shower with soap and water So a little bit. Yenatma supersiddhiti. So this is the point. This is the whole point. Without this, we will never be satisfied. And therefore, we'll be looking for it. And we'll be looking for love in all the wrong places. We'll be looking for love in all the wrong faces. Like that. And we'll be creating all kinds of material reactions like that. You know? So if somebody gives us the opportunity to investigate by serving, what's a better way to know somebody than take up his service? Yeah? You try to serve him and his mission, then you know what kind of person you're dealing with. So here we have this opportunity, you know, to get yenatma supersiddhiti. Yeah. And we should take it up. That's our whole goal. So when we hear these pastimes, if we're not entering into, ecstasy and not entering into a real liberating, consciousness by these pastimes and so on, there's something wrong. Yeah? And of course, people who deal with children, many times, like, children will see, like, the story of Tinkerbell or something like that. Then after that, you've got to watch it again and again. So many times, like, kids will get fixated on one story. They'll watch the movie again and again. And the adults will be going nuts, Maybe the lady's staying home and her husband comes home and tells him, watch out, fella. I had to listen to Tinkerbell 7 times today. Then the kids will discover a song or something. It's for them to sing along with. And they'll feel a tantrum unless you join them singing the Dickie the Dinosaur song or something. Yeah. So these pastimes have such potency. And sometimes the problem is we get lost in the forest from the trees. Sometimes I'll just do a class, like in the evening, I'll just sit there. It's like a temple class in a small temple in San Francisco or something, and people are sewing for the deities or this, that. Okay. It's kind of a family thing. Just read the entire chapter, In the beginning, people are kind of like, what are you doing, And it's a little bit dry, using my experience, but not bad. You can tolerate it. And at the end, you definitely have a transcendental experience. Internally, you feel so nice, The Maha Mantra bounces off different things. When you start chanting, try to chant faster, try and chant clearer, whatever. You start seeing how the different muscles that you can feel inside of you need to be stimulated and moved and that kind of stuff. So you develop such subtle, sensuous capabilities like that, knowledge acquiring senses and everything else by chanting the Maha Mantra. And then, of course, in the pastimes, of course, in the same way. Like that. So my only observation that today we're hearing about how Brahma came out of the nose and everybody's amazed. And he responded by trumpeting, by making a large jagara, or whatever it is, like that. And by the sound vibration, Baba could understand, oh, this is God. So, any comments, questions?
Okay, Maharish, I'm setting this up. So, Guruji, I just want to remind everybody that this is the last time for a whole month. And the 13th of July.
Yeah. You saw my. You asked why I was traveling on the 13th. The 13th wasn't bad luck.
Yeah.
But I answered.
I noticed that on verse 23, it says, "Iti mimangsha tatsya." So mimangsha means deliberation. I always think of the mimangsha philosophy, which is a misunderstanding of the goal of the data.
Somebody's bouncing their microphone all around. Maybe you've got a lapel mic or something. Yeah, making a lot of noise. Terrible chaos.
Okay, I muted.
Mimangsatas. Yeah. Mimangsa. Yeah, I don't know what it means. Yeah.
Deep thought. Deliberate.
Oh, yeah?
Looked it up. because I thought it
okay.
was interesting. But I closed all my windows.
Well, maybe the authors of that system think that their system is like, you know.
Oh, yeah. They think that they've got the real thing.
Yeah, the Maya bodies don't think it's a bad thing. And actually, apparently, it's the name of their school.
Yeah.
And we think it's the most despicable word in the world, but they're actually quite proud of it, you know, like that, so on, you know. Yeah. Al Capone probably thought his name was very, 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 very respectable. Yeah. Yeah. Would everybody like to have a little pig for Christmas? Boar. Anybody ever go in the forest and see a wild boar, full size? You know, they're dangerous.
Yeah, in Hawaii, they have. They're very dangerous.
The tusks are razor sharp, you know, and so on. But usually the whole thing is that daytime and things like that, unless there's real, you know, real hunger or something, then usually everybody just tries to just, like, mind their own business, you know? That seems to be pretty much the basic nature of reality is that in the daytime, in the mode of passion, everybody's concerned mostly with getting food and everything else. And, you know, unless you are food, then, you know, the pigs don't really care about you, you know, unless you're bothering them and that kind of stuff, you know. And we don't care about the pigs. Okay, there's plenty of mushrooms and truffles for, you know, to go around, you know. That.
Raj, I want to ask a question that's, I guess, your answer could be controversial, subject. The reason I'm coming to this question is you were talking about the devotee who had a problem with intoxication, and that somehow through that intoxication.
What is? Yeah, go ahead again. My headphones fell off. Yeah.
Okay, you ready to go?
Yeah.
You can hear? Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that he had a problem with intoxication, but then through that intoxication, he came to some realization. He could kind of see through what was happening, and he gave that up.
Yeah, from a Krishna conscious point of view, like Devahuti and Kardama, they did it. They got involved in the sense gratification, but they did it properly, and they saw it. They weren't attracted again. Yeah.
So I had a similar experience. I was, I guess like many devotees, when we first come to the movement or start associating with devotees, we still have our anarthas. I was still taking intoxication, but yet I was associating with devotees and beginning to chant and read Bhagavad Gita. And I guess it was 1972, I had taken LSD, and I was looking at the pictures in Bhagavad Gita, because I couldn't read at that time, due to the intoxication, and the pictures were phenomenal. And then I got my beads out, and for the first time I chanted 16 rounds, and that was the last time that I ever took intoxication. So
yeah.
It was kind of similar to his experience. And so I'm getting my question now. When I first smoked marijuana, and this is back in the early 60s, probably 1966, it seemed that it gave me this perspective that I've never had before, where it made me question the values of life, the values that I was pursuing, and it made me really start to search. So my question is, do you think there can be some positive things to say about these psychedelic types of intoxication?
I've read that.
And you can ask Ramananda to turn the record button off while you answer the question. But
no, it's okay. Yeah, it's fine. There is I read one of these things published by Gaudiya Mada or something, this and that, you know. It was like some dialogue conversation about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And his time, you know, of course, in India, even now, you know, marijuana is a, what's the word? It's like a publicly, you know, available. I guess it's legal everywhere, you know. It's just controlled by the fact of being like low class or something, kind of tobacco or something. But anyway, and also apparently within some kind of so-called Vedic perspective, there's something about, you know, offering your marijuana to Shiva and this and that and so on. So anyway, the Bhakti Siddhanta's comment was that in the beginning, marijuana might give you a broader perspective than you have. It might shake you up, you know, maybe get you involved in a passion or a little mental. But in the long run, it would prove as a drain and a deficit.
Mm-hmm.
The same way, if you're in the mode of ignorance, and then the piranhas and everything else, the recommendation is, get out there, go get that attractive mate, get that attractive car, get some prestige in society. Wake up, get out. There's things, So it's trying to get people off the couch and, eating cottage cheese and drinking beer and watching, Discovery Channel or something, whatever, to get in the mode of passion for accomplishment and so on. But that's not the ultimate goal, But that's the way to go. Usually people are going to go from the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, the mode of passion, the mode of goodness, the mode of goodness to transcendence, like that and so on. But as much as possible, that's the whole thing with Daksha and Narada, right? Daksha couldn't comprehend how Narada had been able to take them directly, from Brahmacharya ashram to Sannyasa ashram, But it was just possible. So as much as possible, you take the shortest, most efficient route, like that and so on. So if you have a certain attachment, then maybe you have to go through it in a registered fashion, like that. There's so many kinds of, different kinds of, approved fashions for using these things. Like tobacco. Tobacco is approved by the state. The state knows it's not good. The state charges a tax on it. They use a tax for this and that, and so on. Yeah. So that's what I would say, and Prabhupada's giving, different kinds of suggestions here and there, But as a general principle, certain people have to go through certain experiences, and we do them in such a way that we'll go to the next level like that. And the Vedas give probably a very, very broad description of all these different things like that. And no matter where you're at. Of course, in the age of Kali, the best thing is just to be a sublime method which takes you from wherever you're at right to the highest experience like that. And then with that perspective, that's where I'm trying to go. Hey, I don't want to go north. I want to go east, northeast. I'm trying to get from Pennsylvania, from Nashville into New York. Okay. So I don't want to go southwest. I want to go northeast. Yeah. So that general perspective, and then, of course, you start finding details and get inspiration. So many devotees came as heroin addicts, for example. Not so many, but some. And they had this whole, one devotee, I know, with the temple president, kept the heroin locked in his desk. And they would come and they would talk about it and everything else, the experience, everything else, and then he would let him take it. And it was kind of the Jnana Yoga cure there, and chanting and everything else. And we were having somebody who associated, he was able to give it up. Another devotee, his arrangement was he could take as many Gulabji mums as he wanted to and go on Harinam and chant all day. So he would take like 50 or 60 Gulabji mums and go out and chant like a madman and come back and pass out, So after a few days, that worked. Okay.
Maharaj, Dandavats.
Oh, Hare Krishna.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I'd like to add a comment, and I have a question at the end of it. I also had an experience where I cold turkey stopped smoking ganja.
Okay.
And I was, it was before I became involved with the devotees directly, but I was over at a surfer friend's house, and Jim Nadal, he was kind of a clean-looking Latino. I was in the Caribbean at the time, and he was a dealer, and he just showed up, and he had this crazy, local weed, but I didn't know it at the time. Anyway, I was with these fruitarians. I hadn't eaten nothing but fruit for a year. I was just eating this stuff. I wasn't smoking. I wasn't even eating it. I didn't eat it. I was already spaced out, yinned out. So he starts passing this big spliff around to my friend, and then they, I was the third person there, so they were going to hand it to me, and I said, no, that's okay. And so I could tell they were a little uncomfortable with my decision not to smoke with them. So on the next round, I said, okay, and I just took a couple of hits. And it was this, it was crazy weed. Anyway, my mind went to this really paranoid place. like sometimes, you know, you have that experience on this stuff. And Jim, he could see in my eyes that that I was having this effect. And so he starts picking on me. And a voice inside of me goes, you know, it just remembered all the terms connected with getting stoned, which are mostly negative, wrecked, destroyed, wasted, blasted, you know, some really, you know, negative mental states. Right. But, yeah, about the only positive one is high, and then Prabhupada turned that into, you know, let's get high together, you know, forever, you know, with Krishna. Nam. But, and then the voice inside of me said, yeah, you're really enjoying this. What the hell are you doing? And then I...
yeah.
You know, and so that was it for me. But I don't... Yeah, like Narahari said, there is something... I don't decry the whole experience. You know, I took... I also took psychedelics during the... I grew up in the 60s. I mean... You almost had to be in a closet not to have done something like that. But what this stuff made me realize was that my normal consciousness was not the all in all, that there was a lot more going on than I was normally aware of.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you try to do this stuff as a devotee, and I was around Jaitirtha, unfortunately.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah,
my God. Wow.
He came. You know, he was. You know, it was in 81 when they were having this difficulty of trying to figure out what they're going to do with those of us that had gone over to Seashore Shinomari. So they finally came to the conclusion they were going to just disconnect us. So Jayatirtha was having problems at the same time, and he was on the Vyasa sign, and there were some scenes where you know he fell off the seat and was babbling in tongues and stuff, and they actually brought a tape over to Shoshana Marsh and they played it for him. And within a few minutes, Shoshana Marsh said, "Turn it off." You know, they were asking him, you know, "Is there something to this?" And he said, "Forget it." You know, but somehow Jayatirtha ended up coming to Shoshana Marsh after he had saved his sannyas on the request of Bhavananda and some others. He came over, and he wasn't done with this stuff, and they were calling it sacrament, and they were offering it. Yeah, and then I went up to Nepal.
Yeah.
I went up to Nepal, and he was so afraid that of me that I was going to say something that would have maybe hurt the faith of his followers up there because they were doing this stuff. That he started to explain that Prabhupada never said that ganja, you know, explicitly in the books, was, you know...
I think a nectar of instruction.
Intoxication, right. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. No, there's a list. I'll look it up, yeah.
So he had that... It is in there somewhere. But he had this convoluted argument that... you know, Prabhupada said, at the Hindu weddings, invariably there's going to be some bong or something. Anyway, somehow he had this convoluted idea that, you know, it was okay. But we know what happened at the end, and it was a neon sign. It was actually in neon for everybody. And Krishna arranged it that way so that we understand we do not mix intoxication with Krishna consciousness. It was an extreme example of, you know, that we do not do that. So the downside of this type of intoxication, and it came up during the time of Prabhupada, was that it brings you close to death, you know, some of this stuff. It's dangerous.
Use of pan, this next instruction. Use of pan, harritaki, betel nuts, various spices used in pan making, tobacco, LSD, marijuana, opium, liquor, coffee, and tea is indulged into the tallest demands. Yeah, that's right there. It didn't say ganja,
but some of it,
marijuana. Yeah.
Yeah, some of it is very dangerous, and the psychedelics are very powerful, and they alter your consciousness.
Oh yeah.
And it's altered, meaning you when you start at the beginning and you take this stuff, at the end you're in a different place, and it may you may be improved or degraded on account of that experience. And I remember Sarabi, something happened, I said something, or, you know, he knew me a little bit, and he said, he made a funny comment at one point, he said, Vidugda, either you've taken too much LSD, or you didn't take enough.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. Anyway, I just wanted to give vent to some of this stuff, but I do have a serious question.
Okay.
And it's got to do with the text, okay?
Okay. Okay.
And at the end of the 12th chapter, the father Manu, I'm reading in English, handed over his daughter Akuti to the sage Ruchi, the middle daughter Devahuti to the sage Kardama.
Uh-huh.
So then we have in the next chapter suddenly, and this is during the conversation that maybe it's a conversation later, maybe some time has passed and he's having a conversation with Manu, but suddenly we hear about the earth being in the Garbhodak ocean. And he's asking Manu if he could help him get it out of there. And that's due to, you know, Devahuti, Kardama, Aranyaksha, you know. And so the Vedas are famous for not being chronological. You know, they don't.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be a high priority. But here we are in the middle of creation, and already the earth and the ocean, you know.
Because what is it? Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha are the daughters of Dipi, and Dipi is one of the 50 daughters or whatever it is of Daksha. Yeah. So it goes on like this. Yeah, I agree. I just think it actually. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I noticed that too.
Yeah. So you got Devahuti and is the daughter of Manu. Given to the sage Kardama, and all of this, she was pregnant for 100 years. She was, not, you know, she didn't want to give birth. She knew it was coming.
Kashyapa and Diti, yeah. 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 The Diti is the daughter of...
Oh, Aditi. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I got it mixed up. Thank you for the correction. Yeah, thank you. Aditi, I got them confused.
But even still, it's a problem if you look at it, because Diti is, I think, one of the 50 daughters or whatever it is that come from Daksha in his competition with Narada. And he gives
birth to Kashyapa.
And she gives birth to Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha. Like that.
Right.
So I think maybe somewhere along there is, But the thing is, of course, it's cyclical too. Like, which comes first, spring or summer? You know, it depends how you look at it, the circle, like that, and so on.
Uh-huh.
And it overlap in the same place, too. And so maybe the things, you know, are happening here or happening there, what's causing everything else to happen. Yeah. It's just stirring the frosting. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Mara. Thank you so much for your class. Really appreciate the conversation going on here at the end of class and what Vidugda just said. But I'm afraid not everyone is aware of this neon sign that you're speaking of. Everyone knows how it ended. Everyone knows the neon sign. And it's something that I would like to know so that I can tell my children and also all the other young devotees I know that smoke. So let's hear it. What's the neon sign?
Okay, I'll say it. I'll try to do it diplomatically or a little bit.
I wasn't going to say it.
Oh, and also, Maharaj, I'd like to know where you found that list.
What list?
Okay. You just read of intoxicants.
The list of... Oh, it's in the first verse of, I closed the book, first verse of Nectar of Instruction, the second half, and yeah, like that.
All right.
Yeah. One break, I'm kind of inserted here, it's like a chronics thing here, that we were in a class in so those people who speak Spanish will appreciate this, we were in a class in Ecuador, and I could give a Sunday Peace class, and, you know, in Guayaquil there, and everything was very nice, and then one lady, maybe about like 38, she said, you know, I got your books, and you know, and it's so nice and so attractive to Krishna consciousness and everything is so wonderful. But then I had a really big problem, you know. And we all said, well, what's that, you know? She said, well, I have a bakery, you know. And it says in your books that bread is for satisfying illicit desires like that. And I have this bakery like that and so on. So nobody could figure out what she was talking about. But, of course, if you know the thing right away, the word for bread in Spanish
pan.
Is pan. Yeah. So it says right there in the list, and nobody could believe it since you opened the book up and we all read it and said, okay, that's a different kind of pawn. Yeah. This shows you that the commentaries have to go on. Yeah, that's an inward Prabhupada. Everybody has to make commentaries. That's a different kind of pawn like that and so on. Yeah, so okay, go ahead. Then with Jayatirtha, his unfortunate conclusion of all of his activities there.
Want me to do it?
Yes.
Okay.
I probably heard, but I've heard.
I'm going to give some background, a little background.
Okay, but if you could very, very poignantly point out, this is the neon sign, something, soundbite, that's your word, soundbite. Give it to me in a soundbite so I can actually use it for preaching to these children that, you know, teenagers that smoke.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I want to give a little background. One thing, Jayatirtha was around Timothy Leary before he came. He was somebody in that circle. He actually had a name, it was White Feather. So he was in the psychedelic culture, and part of it was that they would guide people through. They had so much experience with this LSD that they could guide people that were less experienced through the experience. So it was like a guru thing. So for whatever reason, he went back to this, he left Srila Sridhara Maharaja's mat, and they were very sad that, you know, they couldn't help him. He, you know, they heard about it after he left. And Srila Sridhara Maharaja's expression was, may Nityananda save him from this black attempt. So as time went on, things got very strange within his circle of followers that were doing this. And they even started to take on names and personas, sometimes Christian saints, or one girl showed up at Srila Sridhara Maharaja's mat claiming to be Bhaktivinoda reincarnated. It was getting really weird. And so at some point, and also Jayatirtha, he ended up with somebody's wife, and he was in London. And it was his Vyasa Puja day, and his disciple, who was also under the influence of this stuff, somehow became crazy, and he thought, anyway, Jayatirtha was murdered. But that wasn't even enough. This guy was so crazy that he removed Jayatirtha's head from his body.
Machete.
Okay, you can figure out the soundbite.
I know that story. I mean, you know, I got a little more background, but how is this a neon? How is this going to convince people not to smoke?
Well, a person convinced against their will. Yeah, keep your head, right. Well, see, no, the neon sign is that if you are going to be a devotee and you're and then you want to preach that this stuff is going to help you be a devotee, then you're in trouble.
Okay. Prabhupada made a very simple statement, I believe, where devotees were asking about smoking. Lord Shiva smoked ganja, and then Prabhupada said, yes, but he also drank an ocean of poison. So if you can drink an ocean of poison, then you can smoke ganja. In other words, we can't follow his example.
He also said that some of us, when we think that intoxication, whether it be acid or grass or whatever, that it helps us come to Krishna consciousness, and I can't give you the exact quote, but I've read it.
Say that again? What did you say? Repeat that?
Some of us think that intoxication helped us, that it opened us up, so many things. But Prabhupada said you should think in that you came to Krishna in spite of it. Because I was preached for you. I mean, I was with Jayatirtha's group. I was with the Brotherhood. That's how I first came to Krishna consciousness, on acid at the Laguna Beach Temple. Blew me away, and I stopped it cold. Because I saw that it was, I mean, I went through that whole guidance thing with Timothy Leary's people. I knew them all. I mean, but Jayatirtha saved my life twice, spiritually and physically. And so I am totally indebted in the way I look at it, is I look at it that Krishna used him, like you said, Vidagda, to teach a very heavy lesson that you don't teach and preach and mix it with everything that, you know, all the things we're preaching about in terms of not enjoying this material world and sense gratification and, you know, all those things. It's all bogus. I mean, he should have known that he was also cut off. I mean, I was there when he took Sanya. I watched what happened. He was like a riven cloud when that happened. He should not have been forced to take.
So are the children or the teenagers that are smoking, do they either not know this story in depth, or do they just, they're not processing it, or what's the problem? Why are they still smoking?
Well, it's they're not thinking it's helping their Krishna consciousness. It's like a rebelling. Actually, sadhus in India smoke ganja. And Chola Shirmai said something interesting. He said, it may help your concentration, but it will not help you. It's an enemy to faith. It will abandon you, like when it really counts, at the time of death or in a crisis, it will not help you.
We're here with Nityagora Sundar, who's geriatric psychiatrist at the psychiatric hospital. And he's saying that tobacco, when your senses are agitated and you're suffering, maybe from eating meat and that kind of stuff, the nicotine kind of anesthetizes them, poisons them. But it stimulates the central nervous system, so people start smoking and writing and doing all this kind of stuff like that too. On, so it has a certain level at a certain thing. You know, I mean, you get a certain kind of diet, you know, a certain kind of combination of food and this kind of stuff to do different things like that and so on. You know, yeah. Under certain circumstances, for example, alcohol. I had one person who was already doctors in the mountains. He almost went into hypothermia and died. You know, so there was some alcohol there, and he took that. And all, you know, he saved his life and so, because he knew what he was doing, you know. So the proper circumstance, in the same way, I suspect that marijuana is probably tobacco. Tobacco is really good for bruises. You know, the fresh organic tobacco, you just chew it up, plaster it on a bruise, and it'll take the clot out and blood out like that. So I have a suspicion that marijuana, if it's used properly, is, you know, it's in its proper position, it's okay and stuff like that and so on. I have to go, though.
Yeah, it has its place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although India Divine, Atmatattva published a South Indian Ayurvedic doctor who said that they have a way of detoxifying it, that the and that it has toxic properties.
Yeah.
If you don't do it, you don't do that.
Oh yeah. I should go though. One great clip. When Reese Jones, he was head of the two people in charge of the drug abatement program at the University of California. We saw him with Swoop Dhammadhar. And he said there's a book called The Myth of Addiction. And he says that all the deaths from all the illegal drugs combined was insignificant compared to the deaths from alcohol and tobacco. But they were economically, you know, tied in. And he also said that there are many, many doctors who are heroin addicts. Not many, but you know some number, a reasonable number. And if you take it at a proper dosage and it's clean, yeah, it makes your liver work faster. You're getting energy and stuff like that, and it'll take years off your life. But it's not that it'll destroy you very quickly and so on. But the problem is with the impurities and everything else like that and so on. Yeah. So anyway, I should go, though. But well, thank everybody, and please bless us that we can do our part in all this Sankirtan activity in South America and every place else. Wow, we need your association. Actually, this is the Sangha, and very nice, because my background is like, I know, what happens to devotees stick with the process for many years and everything else. And it's like, of course, it gives you this very solid, subtle perspective that this process is a very nice process, and you can recommend it to people then. So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. See you
in another
month. See you in another month.
Nos vemos en un mes.
Sí.
Haribo.
Haribo. Haribo.
Haribo.